All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossun with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800. And our guest today is quite a catch for us here on Veterans Radio. We're going to be speaking with General Ann Dunwoody, U.S. Army retired. General Dunwoody was the first woman promoted to the rank of four-star general, and she has authored a book called A Higher Standard. General Dunwoody, please say hello to the Veterans Radio listening audience.
Hi, hello, and good afternoon. And first, let me just say thank you to all the veterans. I'm so proud of you, and I know that whether you serve 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, or 38 like myself, that because of your leadership, responsibilities, and your values, that we return better citizens. And so thank you for all you do.
Well, General, we really appreciate you being on with us today. And having read, I can certainly recommend your book, A Higher Standard on Leadership Strategies from America's First Female Four-Star General. It was published by DeCapo Press. We'll talk a little later about where you can find it. But let's start with just a brief overview, General, of your 38 years in the service. Hard to do 38 years briefly, but let's try it.
Okay. Well, for starters, I never ever dreamed that I'd end up in the military or even thought about joining the military, even though I came from four generations of West Pointers in my family. It just never occurred to me. Since I was probably 5 years old, I knew I was going to be a coach and a physical education teacher. I was a tomboy, if they still use that word, loved sports. Went to the University of Cortland in upstate New York because it is one of the top physical education schools in the country. And a funny thing happened on the way to college there, actually after I got into school. My junior year in college was the end of the Vietnam War, and the Army was trying to recruit women into its rank. And so they designed a program that if you were accepted and qualified, that they paid you $500 a month during your senior year in college. You got commissioned as a second lieutenant, and you only had a two-year commitment. And $500 was a lot of money back then. And I figured I could stand on my head for 2 years, and I knew this was just going to be a short two-year detour in route to my coaching career. And when I got into the Army, I realized, and I remember telling my dad, you know, I really love being a soldier, and I love leading soldiers, and I'm going to do this as long as I enjoy it and I can make a difference. And 2 years turned into five, turned into 10, then turned into 38. And probably the irony of all that is, well, there were times when I thought I wasn't fulfilling my childhood passion of becoming a coach and a physical education teacher. The reality is I really did fulfill my dream. I just did it in a different profession, in a different battlefield, a different classroom. I did it in the United States Army, where I very physically demanding profession, where I got to coach hundreds of thousands of men and women.
Well, let's give people a little understanding of some of those early job duties. Maybe talk about what your MOS was and sort of the core that you were detailed to with the U.S. Army, General Dunwoody.
Okie dokie. I was a quartermaster officer, and the reason I ended up being a quartermaster officer is when we had to select our branch, I just asked which one would send me to airborne school. You know, I love sports, and I thought, and they hadn't really started letting women officers jump out of airplanes yet. And so I asked if anyone would allow me to go, and Quartermaster Branch said, we'll send you. And off I went to Quartermaster Branch. So that was the genesis. But when I first joined the Army, they still had the WAC Corps. So I was part of the WAC Corps for a very short time until that's the Women's Army Corps, which was kind of a separate women's entity of the United States Army back then. And then they disestablished it, and we began the journey, which was most of my entire career, a decade of the integration of women into the regular Army. And starting out at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, my very first assignment, I was a platoon leader and responsible for about 100 men and women who did logistics, ordering repair parts and supplies. And every one thing about the military is they know how to develop leaders. That's what we do. And so each assignment comes with schooling, and each progressive assignment comes with additional schooling. And the military really knows how to prepare you for your next assignment through an informal program, coaching and mentoring, and also through its formal assignment and schooling process.
Well, I think there's we could spend all the time talking about your career, whether it was in the 82nd Airborne, as a parachute officer, as you moved into logistics and maintenance, all very fascinating things. But I want to jump off here because you're talking about how the military and the Army prepare you for leadership roles. Let's talk about your book, A Higher Standard, which discusses leadership strategies. There are a number of lessons or leadership ideas that you talk about throughout the book, and one is about, you know, teaching every soldier to sort of be better, that maybe that's a lesson for all leaders. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, when I first joined the Army as a woman back then in the 1970s, I naturally assumed that I would have to exceed the standard. And as you know, men and women in the military are held to a higher standard. We take an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. That's pretty heady stuff for an 18-year-old. We are subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which is kind of like a code of conduct that governs our behavior in and out of uniform 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And then, of course, we have standards for everything we do, how many push-ups you can do, how fast you can run, how you wear your hair, how you wear your uniform, how many times you could hit a target with a variety of weapons. So there are standards for everything we do, and rightfully so. It's a dangerous profession. And when I came in, I naturally assumed that I'd have to exceed those standards in order to be accepted into this male-dominated profession and into the race. And that's just what I tried to do. But what I learned through my journey is that all of the good leaders that I work for, the ones I looked up to, and I never worked for a woman, I always worked for men who either believed in me or didn't, held themselves to a higher standard and encouraged their subordinates to do the same. And when I talk about a higher standard, I tell people, if you have a team of folks that just meet the standards, average, you probably have an average team. If you have a group of folks, a team that people want to strive to exceed the standard, A students, you probably have a high-performing organization. And so in order to have a high-performing organization, you want to encourage every member of that team to exceed the standards, go for the gold, make it better.
Well, I think those are, and one of the things we try to do in Veterans Radio is sort of put pearls of wisdom out there, and I think you've just given us one, so I appreciate that, General. I want to quote a line that you wrote in your book that says, great leaders eliminate, separate, isolate, or retire those not willing to improve. Can you talk a little bit about that? That's a pretty direct and bold statement. I think there's probably a lot of people who might be uncomfortable by that line, but it's probably really good advice. Tell us what you were thinking about.
When I think about organizations, and everyone's been part of one, and normally you have, you know, 10-20% at the top of the organization who you know are your go-to people. They'll do anything. They'll do everything. They do it great. You can always count on them. And then in the middle of the organization, about 80% or so, you have folks that enjoy what they're doing, come to work, not going to be superstars, not going to ruin the curve, not going to raise the high board, just do their thing and go home. And then at the end of the organization, or the tail end, is there about 10 to 20% maybe that don't care about the organization, don't want to be there in the organization, want to do as little as possible to get by, and just show up for work, sometimes on time, sometimes not, and don't give it their all, and don't want to be part of the culture. especially if you have to try to make a change, a major change, you need this organization to be on the same sheet of music. And what I witness, if you don't reward those at the top end, the top 10, 20%, and recognize their hard work, doing the right thing for the right reason, making a difference, and at the same time, you don't do anything to the folks that are dragging the organization down because they don't care, don't want to be there, have a bad attitude, this is not for them, then that 80% in the middle, they're looking to those folks that are working your fannies off and doing a great, and nothing's happened to them. And then they look the other way, and they see folks that just barely show up for work and nothing's being done to them. And if I was in the middle of that curve, I go, why should I work my fanny off if no one cares, no one recognizes me? And these guys and gals who don't do anything, nothing happens to them. And it's a slippery slope, and I've seen organizations be transformed that way. But if you recognize those top 10, 20% every time they do something good, whether it's a handshake, pat on the back, and you correct, make on-spot corrections, and try to coach and mentor those to do better, that are down the bottom, and they don't, and nothing happens, the people in the middle, they'll know what side they want to be on. People come to work wanting to make a difference normally. And when they see people care, then they'll try to make a difference.
No, that's good advice. You also offer up some advice in the book, and we're talking to General Ann Dunwoody, retired from the U.S. Army. The title of her book is A Higher Standard. And I really like this short, sweet piece of advice, which is, never walk by a mistake. You learned that kind of early on in your career, and tell us how it played out through the whole career, maybe.
Yeah, I learned that from my very first platoon sergeant, who was a Vietnam veteran. And he told me, Lieutenant Dunwoody, I'm going to make you the best platoon leader in the Army. Not the best female platoon leader, the best platoon leader. And he taught me a lot of things, and most of them enduring. But one of the most important lessons he taught me was to never walk by a mistake. And he said, if you walk by a mistake, you just set a new lower standard. Now, in the Army, it could be something as minor as a soldier shuffling down the sidewalk in uniform with his hands in his pockets, and you have to say, you know, take your hands out of your pockets. We don't walk that way, and in a kind way, so just correct them. Sometimes they don't know, and sometimes they do. It could be something as not maintaining your weapon to standard. Well, not maintaining your weapon to standard in training could result in a malfunction, but not maintaining your weapon to standard in war could result in a fatality. But this simple lesson that doesn't, as Bracewell, but it's hard, doesn't just apply to the military or the battlefield. And when I think about organizations like General Motors, if someone had highlighted the ignition problem instead of trying to cover it up, how many lives would have been saved, how many millions of dollars that were invested in cover-up damage control and lawsuits could have been saved. Volkswagen, if people had uncovered the conspiracy instead of being part of the conspiracy, again, how many millions of dollars could have been saved, maybe billions in that case. And the Veterans Administration, what breaks my heart, what if people had highlighted the backlog problem with their patients instead of trying to cover it up with phony metrics? How many veterans we could have helped instead of prolonging their suffering? And so it's a very simple principle, has huge implications, briefs well, hard to do.
No, I think you're right, General. The book is written as a leadership book, is really for not just military folks, but really anybody. And I think it applies whether you're running a corporation or just one of the many employees in a corporation. By never walking by a mistake, it makes a big difference to the overall organization if everybody did that with that kind of approach. You have another pearl of wisdom, I think, that you learned that probably should be passed on to others, which is leaders aren't invincible. Don't try to be. Tell us how you came to learn that hard lesson.
That is a hard lesson. But you can imagine, and you can see it, and I know our veterans know, the military, we're pretty macho, and we're pretty proud, and we should be. We think we're invincible. We think we can do everything and anything, and we think we can do it at record speed. And that's what you want. You want your soul to be highly motivated. You want to believe in themselves. You can believe anything you can do. But at the same time, we're still human beings. And all of us have stress level points where it causes us angst. And sometimes it's a confluence of a family problem, a financial problem, education problem, school grades, children problems, divorces, deaths in the family. And when, again, we're all human. For me, the incident was I was in Germany, and I was a senior parachutist. I was commanding a rigger detachment, and I was going through a divorce myself, so my family situation wasn't good. I was far away from my family, who were back in the United States, and at the same time, I had a crummy job. I didn't enjoy the job that I had, and we were living in a crummy house. In my mind, I was my family relation, good Catholic, was turned upside down. I didn't like where I lived, and I didn't enjoy my job. And I started getting sick, and I went to see the doctor and said, boy, I should feel crummy in the morning. And he said, you know, he ran some blood tests and did kidney tests, and he said, are you under a lot of stress? I go, shoot, I got the sissiest job in, over here in Europe. And then it hit me like, you know, the 2x4 in the forehead, thinking, yeah, I guess I do have a little bit. I'm trying to smile all the time, knowing I'm going through a divorce, knowing I don't like my job, and knowing I'm not happy where we live. And I started getting an ulcer. And it made me realize that I need to get on home, talk to my mom and dad, talk to friends, and talk about the whole situation, or it wasn't going to get any better. And so the real lesson is that we all have good times and hopefully most blessed times, and there's also times of stress, and we've got to be a lookout in our subordinates, in our peers, when you start seeing some of these signs, because it's not natural to talk about it, or in sometimes we see people whine about it, but it's not. It's just a human factor that we're all subject to, and none of us are invincible.
Well, General, I appreciate you sharing that with us, because I do think at times, whether it's in our civilian career or as we look at our military leaders, we think, well, they've had a bed of roses the whole time. It's always been easy for them. They've never had a challenge, and your book is very candid in that regards, that, hey, there are hard times in your career and almost every military officer's career about, you know, being away from home, the personal issues, bad assignments, and bosses that just didn't get it. You had a few of those.
Fortunately, there's only a few.
And those have to be balanced off against good mentors, and you also had those.
Yes, I did. I in my book, I describe, I tried not to describe and throw people in the bus, because that's not my style. I did try to describe the kinds of leaders that I work for in the three broad categories. One, advocates, and I said I never worked for a woman. I worked for men who either believed in me or didn't. And fortunately, I had a lot more advocates, those who see something in you, believe in you, coach and mentor you, even when you don't even know they're weighing in. They might influence an assignment even without your knowledge, because the system might have let you down, and they are keeping track and see that you have potential to do something. So those advocates, in which I'm blessed to have many throughout my career, are the real folks I learned so much from. The second group, patronizers, or Janus Spacers, are the folks, and we all have them. They're not just in the military. They're people that say something really nice to you in your face, and then they go behind you and they're backstabbers, or they're talking bad about you. And those are, they're kind of dangerous people until you know that, and really understand, you know, what type of leadership style they have. And then finally, detractors. And they're just people that just don't like you for whatever reason. Maybe they don't believe women should be in the military. Maybe, you know, this is a man's world, and they just don't like you for whatever reason. But the real leadership lesson for me was not who you worked for or what kind of leader you worked for, but how you dealt with those leaders. And I tell young kids, I tell peers, I tell groups, I talk. The way to deal with it is don't lower your standard. Don't stoop to their tactics of name-calling, innuendo, and lower your standard. But stay on the moral high ground. Stick to your guns. And many times, by not stooping to their standards or lowering your own, you can make believers out of non-believers.
And I think that's excellent advice. We're talking to General Ann Dunwoody, retired from the U.S. Army, author of A Higher Standard. I want to touch on one more pearl of wisdom that you've provided us, General, because I think we all need to be reminded of this. And it's your chapter, which you entitled The Mirror-Mirror Syndrome, sort of subtitled Leverage the Power of Diversity. Can you tell us why you included that concept in your leadership book?
As you can imagine, back in 75, and I know most veterans, it wasn't a very diverse crowd. There were a few minorities, but it was pretty much all white males. And throughout my career, it was mostly all white male leadership. And now, as I mentioned earlier, what I witnessed, the doors continued to open. And while I was the first female four-star, the Air Force has now had three, and the Navy has had one admiral. So you'll see, you know, I'm proud of that, and I'm proud of them, and I'm proud how far we've come. I was excited to be able to jump out of an airplane. My niece is an Air Force A-10 pilot. Now there's women who've graduated from Ranger School, so the doors have continued to open for all. I talk about the power of diversity because while we've come a long way, I think we have a long way to go. Because in some people's minds, diversity is about having one of these or one of those on your team or one of this. The real power of diversity, in my mind, is the diversity of thought. And you want to go out and recruit the best and brightest from all walks of life. And so that you'll be getting, when you have hard questions, complex tasks, you're getting feedback from people with different lenses, different from your own views. And I can't tell how many times I've sat around tables and conference rooms, all white male but me. And I've seen also just all white males. And when you look like and same education and same lens, you're not going to get a very diverse perspective. And what I found is by bringing in more diverse thoughts that I always came up with a better solution.
And I think that's really the point here is that as you get more diversity in types of individuals, you get more diversity in thought patterns and approaches. And when you talk to different folks who have different experiences, they may approach a problem in a totally different way that solves it in a much more elegant fashion that you wouldn't have come up with.
Absolutely. Time and time again, I can't even begin to tell you. And I'll say one more thing. It's not part of the question, but it's part of the, I think, this whole issue is many people don't realize that only 30% of the males in this country between the ages of 18 and 25 are even eligible to come into the military. They're either not high school graduates, they're overweight, have drug problems, been incarcerated, or other medical conditions. And so when you think, that's not a military problem because everyone's vying for the same talent pool. And then when you throw the diversity issue of getting out there to recruit the best and brightest, that's exactly what you have to do. You have to make a concerted effort. You have to have a strategy to go out and get these talented, diverse people from different walks of life because they're being scooped up before. If you think you're going to come knock on your door, that usually doesn't happen.
Well, it's a great place to maybe end it. General Dunwoody, I think your leadership book, A Higher Standard, is an excellent read for everybody to get some of these pearls of wisdom from 38 years of military service. Where can folks find more out about you, General, and where can they maybe find how to get their hands on a copy of your book?
Okie dokie. Well, it's on Amazon.com. Easy, it's Kindle version or whatever version you want. It's also many bookstores, Barnes & Noble, And I have a website, AnnDunwoody.com. And you can Google me, unfortunately, and also find a lot about me. But I do have a website about the book, and that's AnnDunwoody.com.
Well, that's great. And I can highly recommend this to our veteran radio listening audience, having read it and found it both fascinating from its suggestions and ideas on leadership that apply to anybody's life, but also to read through it and get a glimpse of somebody who had a unique and somewhat historic career working her way all the way up to a four-star general. So we're grateful that you were on with us, General Dunwoody. I want to thank everyone who's listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are...
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.